Je suis Tamara Vukov, je viens de Montréal et je suis très reconnaissante de la part de la festival pour m'avoir reçue et me donner une occasion pour présenter mon projet. J'ai travaillé pendant longtemps dans la radio communautaire sur une émission féministe pendant les années 90. Puis après, je me suis intéressée aussi dans la vidéo, alors je travaille un peu dans une façon multimédia. Mais ce site web, c'était mon premier projet sur le web. Aussi, je fais des études et je travaille sur des questions de traitement médiatique, des questions d'immigration et d'asile au Canada, en Amérique du Nord. Mais ça m'intéresse aussi ce qui se passe en Europe sur ces questions aussi. C'est un peu ce que j'ai fait et peut-être qu'on peut faire le tour. Mais je pense que c'était Patricia, c'est ça? Laetitia, d'accord. Bon, d'accord. Alors je vais commencer et switcher un peu en anglais. So I just thought I'd talk a little bit about the context of the production of the website. Probably like you, I think for a long time I had wanted to try and do something like this, but I found it hard to find the time and the support and so on to get the skills to do a website. And I was fortunate in that a workshop that was basically organized, that I applied for, that was co-organized by two women's media organizations in Montreal, Studio XX, which is the base, I think, for the HTML web festival, which is concerned with sort of women's digital media. And GIV, Groupe Intervention Vidéo, which is a women's video collective that has, I think, a long tradition from the 70s, you know, late 60s, early 70s, of producing and distributing women's independent video works. And they basically organized a set of workshops and supported, I think we were four media artists to get the training in video editing, digital video editing, as well as web design and so on, and to produce a project. So that's basically how I came to the project. And it took a good year, I think year and a half, to get the training, to learn all the skills and to put the website together. And it was launched, I guess, a year ago in Montreal, the end of 2002. And it's an evolving website. I've slowly been updating it since then. A little bit of the, I guess, impetus, my reasons for wanting to do the website, is I've been thinking about and struggling with and, I guess, having a lot of issues with the framing of the wars in the former Yugoslavia in the Western media. And particularly, I think this came to head for me during the NATO bombing of what's now Serbia and Montenegro at the time, Yugoslavia. This is something we can talk about, because I'm talking in a particularly North American context. I think the North American media has its own particular take on it that might be quite different from how things were in Belgium or elsewhere in Europe, so that might be something we want to talk about afterwards. But I found it difficult as someone with family ties to the region of a mixed background, both Serbian and Croatian, and particularly during the NATO bombing where I had family in Belgrade. I found that that was a time where I felt completely silenced and completely sort of unable to even find some sort of public forum or way to engage in the issues when things were very much reduced to an either-or sort of way of looking at the world. It was, you know, either you were for the bombing or you were for Milosevic and nationalism and so on. And as someone who was against both, I found it a very... I guess a time of a lot of upheaval, as well as having family there. But just trying to find a way to voice myself was very difficult. And I think, in a sense, working on the website was the first way for me to try and create a space where I could get at some of those complexities and the things that I felt had been really left out and what I had problems with in the way I saw particularly the mainstream media in Canada and the United States deal with the issues. And as I said, I've sort of hinted at the media, but what another sort of thing that I feel like really came together for me in that time was looking at, well, I guess at two institutions, sort of Western mainstream media and then sort of the military-industrial complex and how those institutions are coming together more and more. And I mean, this has been very much borne out, I think, more than ever in the last year with, you know, the war in Iraq and so on. But how much these institutions, there's a kind of convergence, I feel, that's happening. And I guess some of the irony is also wanting to work on the internet, which is a technology that comes out of the military. So those were sorts of all, I think, that was a sort of another dimension of the project that I wanted to get at. So basically, as I say, I looked at the web project as a way to sort of get people to pose these kinds of questions that I had, and then also to start to get people to ask questions about the way that they had been led to understand these issues as well. I think that particularly when it comes to military interventions that the West participates in, the way the media works is there's such an onslaught and such an accelerated pace, and it's very hard to take a distance from it and really look at how information is delivered to us and how it works. And so that was another thing that I found interesting doing the website. And as I say, as I mentioned already, I think I'll be interested to get your feedback on how much similarity or difference, you know, in your own experience you've noticed between this context, because, you know, I know very much the media context in North America, and I'd be interested to get a sense of how maybe the contexts are similar or different politically here in Belgium. But I also sort of, it only struck me actually a couple weeks before coming, the sort of irony of presenting this project in Brussels with the NATO headquarters here. So that's, like I say, it took me a while to realize that, but I was like, wow, this is kind of interesting. And I noticed there's the 65 bus. I am sort of interested to go and take a look at the NATO headquarters, because, you know, it's sort of as a sort of center where a lot of this kind of military action was coordinated. I thought it was kind of interesting. Some of the choices around the technology, the training that we were given was basically, I believe it was, you know, it was mostly Macintosh-based technology. It was Final Cut Pro, Dreamweaver, Fireworks, I believe, and so on. I find that having spent some time last year in Europe, I really noticed the difference here around the awareness around free software. And that's something that I'm just starting to learn, but there's so much more going on here, and it's something that what I hope to get out of the workshops this weekend and also take back to Montreal, because I think in North America there isn't nearly as much happening, and I think there should be. But nonetheless, I found it useful to, you know, to learn these tools. And one of the things that I wanted to do when I did the website is I sort of made a choice at a certain point that I deliberately wanted to keep it very low-tech for a number of reasons. So I actually even avoided things like Flash because I wanted, for one thing, to be this to be something that could be accessible in other parts of the world where people don't necessarily have the same fast internet connections, and particularly in the region of the former Yugoslavia. And already using video, because I don't know if I made that clear, but the original workshop was a way to bring video and the web together. So I was coming out of this as more of a video artist. But even just using QuickTime video, I mean, I find now that I've had a bit more experience, it's not that accessible for people who don't have a very fast connection, and, you know, it takes a long time to download and so on. But so it was partly for those reasons. There are questions about accessibility. But also, I think because I was, as I was analyzing the media images around the military intervention in Yugoslavia in particular, and starting to understand even how the graphic design industry and all of this is very much bound up with the way, and I can talk about that later, the way war is packaged to us, you know, the sort of bells and whistles and very high-tech aesthetic, I decided that was also a choice to work away from that. And in terms of the actual video, another thing I found is I had to make a switch from editing video for a screen, like for an actual video presentation, is very different than doing it for the web. You can only use very small clips, you know, if you're used to using sort of a longer format. It's not the same thing at all. So you really have to reconceive how you present stuff as well. And another element that I found, what I decided to, is to use a lot of found footage. I'd videotaped just on my VCR at home a lot of the news coverage. So a lot of what I was doing was using found materials and sort of editing them and reworking them. And I found that to be, I think, probably the most challenging but the most interesting part of doing the website is to really slow down, like I say, when there's an intensity of a military intervention and how we look at stuff, it all happens very fast, and there's a to sit back and really look at how the images are put together and what how things are repeated and what how the whole narrative of a war unfolds was very interesting. And I actually, at times, I found it also very traumatic, you know, because it can really bring back things from a time that can be challenging to digest. But it was very interesting to just slow the images down and do that. The other thing that I decided to do, I'll move to actually showing the website in a moment, but I had decided that I wanted to use quite a bit of text. And so I had this whole question the whole time. I mean, how much is it net art if you use text? Because you have a very visual idea of, you know, is this net art if I use a lot of text? But I found that I wanted to play it off the images in some ways. And I found that an interesting thing to do. But I think it also asks a certain investment of the people who come to the website. You know, I have friends who said, oh yeah, you know, I saw your website, it looks great, but I haven't had time to read it yet, you know. But I found it, but I just wanted to try and play with text as an element of the net art as well. So to go into a little bit of the layout of the site, so this is the opening page. And basically the description at the top, this is sort of, I think, il y a un résumé en français ici aussi, c'est un peu la même chose, just to sort of set up the website. And one of the things that I really, when I was looking at the media images at the start of the NATO intervention into Yugoslavia, is just the constant use of maps. And that was something that really, really struck me, the way mapping and mapping technologies become, I think, a way of creating a certain kind of gaze on an area and how we think about it. So that sort of became one of the, I think, key metaphors of the site, is the different kind of maps that we use to approach an area. The other thing, so the way I sort of divided the site, this area, proximal distances, is sort of dealing more with the military and media sides of what I was looking at. Ghostly presences, I'll go to it in a minute, but this is more, I think, trying to get a historical look on how the whole area, the Balkans, have been conceived in the West, in Europe and North America. I think particularly there's a longer European tradition of this. But North America as well, and how that sort of played into some of the media coverage of the area. Then disjuncture, this area was sort of, I guess, more my personal voice coming into, you know, what it was like during that time and having family in the area and what the impacts of it were. And then this fourth side, it's more like links and people's feedback and so on. So that was sort of the general organization, the way I wanted to structure the site. And then also aesthetically, like I say, I wanted to have, I think there are two different kinds of things working aesthetically in the website. Because I wanted, like I say, almost the reverse of the kind of media flash that you get, I decided to go with a lot of gray and to use just very, and to use sort of like this map, for example, sort of old paper and things like that, that a kind of aesthetic that tends to be avoided in a lot of flashy websites, you know. But then when it came to the part, so just sort of the first part, the part on the media and the military, I also sort of wanted to play with those aesthetics to some extent. And it was a bit of a line because I find it seductive, especially, I think, with video games, and our whole visual culture is so oriented to that kind of military, you know, and the internet as well, that there are times I was uncomfortable because it's very easy to use those logos and icons of little bombs and little, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was trying to sort of a tension between wanting to play with that, but then also question it at the same time. Okay, so I'll start with then this first sort of part of the site, which is looking at the military and media. And I mean, one of the cool things that I think the internet allows you to do also is, you know, I have tons of links buried in there to sort of references. So I make references here to the ways that I see sort of, you know, the large institutions of mainstream broadcast media and then military institutions converging in so many ways, right? So let's say, you know, the use of high-tech computer graphic sequences. And I put a link to this guy who did a whole study on the first Gulf War and the way in which, because it was the first time, well, I don't know if it was the first time, but as opposed to, let's say, the Vietnam War, where reporters were able to go anywhere, there was, you know, you had your press pools and very restricted access, and how that actually created a boom in the graphic design industry. Because it was, instead of actually having live footage, graphic designers started creating maps and so on. So I have lots of kind of links. I have a link here. This is something I just added recently. The U.S. Marines and what they wrote about the use of embedded reporters in the last military, you know, just last year in Iraq, and what a great thing they think it is. So I think this is sort of taking the ways in which military media converging to a whole new level. So that was sort of to set that up a little bit. And let's see, okay, so I'll start with some sort of military stuff. So again, you get this whole kind of imaging of targets and so on. And again, very much the sort of role of the graphic design industry in this and how much those graphics become, you know, our representations of it. And I think, again, we can maybe also talk after in the discussions how that's shifted, I think, with the last intervention in Iraq, where because of the embedded reporting and almost this reality TV kind of approach, it's shifted somewhat. But at that point, I think it was still very much in that kind of vein. So I'll go to, I'll go to a page where I have a clip from the North American, actually from a Canadian news show. Okay, so that's just to get a sense of the kind of military display, you know, that we saw and how, I guess, violence, you know, that was in the area is very much portrayed as medieval, as primitive, as so on, you know, I mean, which in a sense also obscures, I think, very similar politics that play out, you know, in the West, you know, a certain kind of nationalism that isn't just specific to the area, but, you know, that plays out in the West, whereas sort of NATO intervention is very much portrayed as rational and civilized and high tech. Okay, that's fine. Okay. No, mediation. You're not the first one who's done that. Okay. And then here I wanted to look at actual, I guess, here again, the convergence between military simulation technologies and video game stuff, which you'll see in a second. But these are actual, basically in 95, the Dayton Accords, I think. Basically, these are the military simulation programs that Wesley Clark coordinated in Dayton, Ohio, when he got Milosevic, Tudjman, and Izetbegovic to sign the Dayton Accords. And they actually got them to sit down and play these kind of these military games to divide the corridor, like a certain kind of corridor. So again, the whole division of territory was very much played out through, you know, and Dayton also basically instituted the ethnic partition of Bosnia into sort of ethnic enclaves, you know, amongst a very, very mixed population. And, you know, you can go to, this is, the program was called Power Scene, and this is, this is out of date. I tried to update all my links before I presented this, but anyhow, but they do have a whole advertisement for Power Scene, the technology, and talking about how it was used in Dayton and how it was used, you know, in all these various military interventions. So again, this sort of whole invisible military-industrial complex between how these things play out politically and also how these sort of really high-tech solutions are being proposed as a way to solve political problems. So So, but there, I mean, there's all kinds of commitments. So these are actual, this is the actual corridor, I think, that was carved, and this is this whole area where it was brought in. So, and you know, I added things to all these other weapons manufacturers and defense contractors. And some of my newer work, I'm getting more and more interested in this side. So, you know, I included things like U.S. arms sales around the world. Evans and Sutherland, which does a lot of visual imaging. And it's, these websites are fascinating because if you go to their links, they actually have promotional videos that sell different kinds of weapons and so on, but very much like car commercials, like they're actual advertisements that really sell them in a certain way. Again, this is more, you know, the global leader in infrared camera technology. Let's see if that comes up. And a lot of these, you know, have been used in all these military conflicts. So that's that. As I say, you know, I think there's also a real convergence now between the sort of military simulation and video game industries. So, for example, I have here Balkan Village. This is a military simulation program that was one of the first projects by an institute in California called the Institute for Creative Technologies. And it's basically, it's based, I think, at the University of Southern California, and it's one of the first official ventures. I mean, I think there's a history of informal ventures between Hollywood and the U.S. Army. So it's basically a think tank that hires creative people from Hollywood, you know, to create and to write scripts and so on for military simulation purposes. And one of the first ones they did was Balkan Village, where, you know, you have U.S. peacekeepers go in. And, I mean, there's a whole narrative around it. I've included it on the page and so on. You know, it's very kind of melodramatic scenario and so on. And, of course, I was researching this before September 11th, 2001, but after September 11th, 2001, they've become like the flagship. So they're writing all these like terrorism scenarios and, you know, drawn out of Hollywood films, basically to train for military training purposes. And what I actually discovered is, actually, this is the actual scenario. This is, I pulled this off of their website, it's like total pirating, but of Balkan Village. I mean, that's about as much as you can get. And now, of course, many more of those. The new scenarios are set in the Middle East and so on. I found, yeah, there's another one by Paramount Studios doing a simulation basically about, oh yeah, it's a Balkan warlord named Dragon Vratislav. And, you know, this American journalist who comes in and the sort of, you know, so, I mean, that's another example of one. You know, all the promotional stuff. It's a marriage made in heaven between Hollywood and the army and so on. You know, it's very much being promoted. And, yeah, I found actually the latest project of Institute for Creative Technologies is an actual video game that's being sold on Xbox consoles, like as a video game. And it's being promoted as the first video game that's actually adapted from a military simulation exercise. So originally it was to train the military, and now it's being promoted and sold on the Xbox. Okay, let's just see. The demo, I'll show you the demo. It's crazy. I don't know, maybe let it load for a moment. But basically they've set it in this fictional place called Uzbekistan. And it's interesting also the way that it's changed, because when I first found references to it, they were... Anyway, I think you can get a sense from the images and a bit of the narrative. Originally, it was supposed to be set in an Eastern European urban setting, was the way it was promoted. And now it's been shifted to a locale called Uzbekistan that used to be occupied by the Soviets. And they've created a whole scenario. So you can choose, like, let me just see if they have, you know, who the players are. So you have the United Nations, the Coalition, the Al-Assad regime. And I can't find it now. Somewhere on the website, they have the whole profile of Al-Assad, who was this, you know, very Western-educated, you know, Uzbekistani, you know, person who then became, turned into militant and so on. And so they create these, you know, kind of, you know, just crazy scenarios. And then, where's the other, wait, let me just see. Oh, yeah. So then they have the profiles of the troops, and these are the different characters. So you can play Sergeant Mendez, Corporal Devereaux, and so on. And it's all supposed to be, this is supposed to be a tactical urban warfare game, right? Yeah. Xbox Gamers Review, you know, and I mean, it's, this is like totally on the market. So, and then they also have, this is a slightly different, there's another game that I have a link to on the page called America's Army, which was the first video game that the U.S. Army developed as a recruiting tool. So it's played as a video game, but they actively recruit through it. This isn't an actual recruiting thing, but you still go, you know, U.S. Army, are you interested in learning more? Then they have a link to the Institute for Creative Technologies that developed the game and so on as well. So, yeah, there's, I wish I could find some of this stuff, but yeah, I mean, here they create a whole history. Mout is the word for this urban tactical whatever. So anyway, this is something new, but I mean, it's very much in the trajectory of the other stuff I've been looking at. Yeah, so like I say, America's Army is another example. And then, you know, you could, oh, I don't think this is on here anymore. Jane's Combat Simulations, Jane's Defense is another website that I put up that, again, it's basically kind of clearinghouse and advertiser for all different kinds of weapon systems. And they have a partnership with one of the biggest video game manufacturers, Electronic Arts. And so they produce these combat simulations as video games as well. So they, the link is down right now, but it's around. You know, so just, again, playing with this idea of, like, combat sim. I think these are, again, simulation games that are video games. I think you get the idea. So one of the things, I mean, this is just a start, and I think this is going to be a longer-term project, but I wanted to sort of jam at least one of those images, especially because I think the 99 intervention, I think it's different with Iraq because there were ground troops set in and you had the whole reality TV, but very much this idea of imaging things from above and bombing from above. So basically I took one of the Electronic Art games and, oh, sorry, wrong one, this one. And I wanted to, this is, and they actually talk about how this is a very realistic cockpit of an F-15 fighter. So I sort of wanted to play with and jam that, you know, in some ways. And again, it's used, and these games are really sold on how realistic and how they're just like, you know, these actual cockpits and so on. So, you know, I'm sort of starting to play with ideas of how we can take this imagery and really interrupt it. So that's sort of what I was playing with here a bit. And sort of trying to bring in all the things that aren't viewed, you know, that are kind of not visible from how many thousands of feet in the air and so on, and what you don't see when you do that. Yeah, so here, I mean, again, I wanted to also bring in and visibilize in a certain sense the fact that, because I think at least in North America, the way things played, it was really, it was such a double bind, right, because clearly, the actions, you know, of the Serbian regime in Kosovo were very problematic and so on. And yet, in a sense, it was used to completely sort of efface, I think, some of what the military actions were actually doing in the whole region, the sort of environmental destruction that resulted, the sort of industrial infrastructure and so on that played out. That's very much, I think, was just completely effaced. And so I wanted to at least make that visible, in a sense. I mean, I think you can have debates afterwards about, you know, but I think I was trying to get beyond the question of how justified it was or wasn't, but, you know, what are the things that are left out in the way that we really, it was portrayed to us. Okay, I'll move on to the sort of media part of it. So again, I wanted to sort of get a sense of the sort of, I guess, bombardment of images, and again, the sort of use of these, the ways in which you kind of develop brands around different wars now, you know, that there's these whole, at least in North America right away, you get this whole kind of packaging of, you know, with a name and a title, you know, it was Operation Allied Force then, you know, Desert Storm, all this kind of stuff. part of the site, but I did a kind of recipe of how you cover wars in North America for North American news producers who want to keep their job, and sort of, you know, how certain figures of evil are constructed so that they become the face of evil of the moment. You know, and that how, again, I think that ties into certain, well, I think particularly U.S. foreign policy around rogue states and how, you know, suddenly this is the new target and how that can change almost from, you know, month to month or year to year. You know, it's just, so you have a different face of evil of the moment. Again, the way in which, you know, suddenly you stop really seeing everyday people interviewed on the news and you have generals and defense people suddenly become the experts to interview. And we had that a lot in Canada, you know, different generals and so on. The branding, so again, the crisis of Kosovo, the sort of display of like the B-2 bomber, which was used for the first time in that intervention. The way that, you know, you get images of buildings blowing up and so on, but you don't really see what's happening on the ground in the same way. And so on. So I think these are the kinds of images that tend to not, you don't tend to see as much, whereas this kind of image is really, again, which is very much these kinds of, I use it elsewhere in the website, but what you're actually seeing when you see these kinds of images where the arrow is the perspective of the actual, like, cameras are mounted on where the bombs are dropped from, right? So, and this is military footage that's released as a way to sort of view what's happening. So that's kind of the media military part of the site. I'll talk a bit about the other two and then other, you know, the fourth part. Okay, so this is a slightly different kind of map that I wanted to invoke. And this is actually a map from the 19th century of Belgrade. That was basically, it's an Austrian military map of the invasion of Belgrade when it was under Ottoman rule. So there's sort of another kind of mapping at work here, military mapping that has a certain kind of history. And here, you know, I talk a bit about how this whole frame of view of the region that was really resurrected in the 90s has a much longer history. So, in a sense, the Balkans have been imagined for a long time as this region, you know, that has all these kind of, this kind of danger and these mixture and instability, you know, particularly, I think, for Europe in a certain way. And also as a kind of impure region because it mixes East and West in all these, you know, kind of strange ways. And Maria Todorova and other people at Vesna Goldsworthy-Well have written books about this, calling, sort of labeling it Balkanism, the way that the whole region gets to be viewed. So I included, you know, again, this is, I think, what's fun about doing these kinds of websites. You can do all kinds of research. So I included interviews with her talking about this whole legacy of Balkanism and how it goes back to even genres like Gothic literature and so on, you know, which is usually, and I'll go into that more in a second, and how the area kind of contains these monsters that have to be contained and tamed by the sort of rational West. And then, in a way, how this whole notion of the area is impure and mixed in all these strange ways played into nationalist agendas in the region that argued that to have a stable nation state, to be European, to be so on, we have to be, you know, a homogenized territory of a certain sense. And, you know, again, all the ways in which then nationalism is gendered, women become, I think, targets of nationalism because they're seen as bearers of a certain kind of impurity. And often what happened at the beginning of the nationalist conflicts in the region is that it was very much people of mixed ethnicities who were targeted. You know, were the first to be targeted in the whole process of trying to homogenize it and just the absurdity of that. And we see this also then, this whole idea of Balkanism recirculated in Western policies towards the region. And Bill Clinton has actually, I mean, he said we have to de-Balkanize the Balkans. You know, what does that mean to de-Balkanize the Balkans? And, you know, that, again, that's a whole other project that I could get into after, but I think, you know, very much the way neoliberalism is being implemented and other policies there is very much tied to this idea that we have to de-Balkanize the area. So I have a bit more here, you know, I look here a bit more at the sort of legacy of Balkanism, and again, this idea of weird mixtures, you know, this is a postcard, I think a French postcard, of a Serbian village in the 19th century. And, yeah, So, yeah, and I include links to articles that talk more, again, about the sort of Balkans and the politics of British intervention historically. Even though she argues, I mean, it wasn't all necessarily a physical colonization, but there was a whole kind of imaginative colonization of the region that was very much, again, tied to British literature and so on. And here's another 19th century map of Belgrade as the Austrian army is invading it. And, you know, again, then various quotes that really recapitulate this kind of Balkanism. For example, Václav Havel in 93 arguing that if NATO is to remain functional, it cannot suddenly open its doors to anyone at all. The Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland and Slovakia, and Austria and Slovenia as well clearly belong to the Western sphere of European civilization. They espouse its values and draw on the same traditions. Moreover, the contiguous and stable Central European belt borders both on the traditionally agitated Balkans and on the Great Eurasian area. So again, how this line gets constantly drawn of where Europe starts, what is rational, where, you know, and what is just outside of it. And how, in a sense, I think within the area that gets battled out between different, you know, ethnic groups, in a sense. So, and again, yeah, George Kennan, who was a big U.S. policy advisor, had very much a similar, he says, that the era of Turkish domination, as he puts it, of Ottoman rule in the area had the effect of thrusting into the southeastern reaches of the European continent a salient of non-European civilization that has continued to the present day to preserve many of its non-European characteristics, which I think of as a very pejorative idea of what that means. No one wants to or should be expected to occupy the entire distracted Balkan region, to subdue its excited peoples, and to hold them in order until they can calm down and begin to look at their problems in a more orderly way. So, you know, again, I think it very much recapitulates. And Clinton as well. So it's just kind of trying to capture a trajectory of it. And then the other part I looked at was the word teratologies means the study of monsters or tales of monsters, and it's actually it's tied to the history of medicine as well, abnormalities and so on. And so I wanted to look at, you know, these ideas of monsters that very much were very much evoked, I think, in the media coverage of violence in the region. It was dramatized in a very particular way, and again, a longer legacy of that. So, for example, you have Jacques Tourneur's film, I think from the 40s, Cat People, which was basically about a Serbian woman immigrant to New York City who basically, when she gets sexually excited, turns into a cat and attacks her lovers and kills them. you know, so there's this whole notion of this explosive, you know, dangerous force. So I just included like a clip from there. So again, very much this whole tradition of viewing the region as evil and having these monstrous dark forces and so on. So Cat People was one of them, and then the other obviously most famous one is Dracula. And what I did there is I actually sort of tried to intercut images of the military display around the NATO intervention, almost borrowing from different genres. Also, there's very high-tech imagery with images from Nosferatu, the film. So I included that, and then I include various, again, the works of Vesna Goldsworthy and other people who really looked at, again, the whole way in which Dracula, as a sort of parable of the fear, Western Europe's fear of pollution by the Balkans, you know. Again, I think a lot of that kind of imagery was, I include, like, links to the way, you know, articles that really draw on that kind of vampiric imagery in figuring, you know, I mean, this is a very extreme example, but, you know, that figures, you know, Serbs in general as having fangs for teeth, claws for hands, you know, I mean, it's very, you know, it's a very inflated example. Upright they walk on two legs, but that's an illusion, and so on. And again, I think also how in moments like that, there's suddenly room made in the media for that kind of, you know, I mean, just very extreme expressions of that. So that's sort of that area of the site. And then the last area I'll show you, I'll just take maybe another 5-10 minutes, this sort of disjuncture, which was, I think, my experience I think throughout the 12 years now since the war started there, but particularly in 99, where it just crossed a different line when, I guess, you have your own, you know, which I think is how war works in a lot of ways, when suddenly your own family and the people you know are being targeted. It's just a whole other level, you know. And, you know, for other people from the region, that was at a different time, depending on where they were from, but that's when it was for me. And I think also where the mapping thing came from was really, I think, this map that I found in the newspaper, and it was a very bizarre thing, because I'd been planning in 99 to go back for the first time since I was quite young. I'd been there in 76 the last time, to visit family that year when the bombing started. And I guess when it started, I realized that this was the first time I actually saw a map of Belgrade, you know, which is where I have family from and so on. And it was really in, like, looking at this map of the targets, you know, and having to call my dad and say, well, where do they live? And they're like, we're living right next to one of the targets, you know. And just that weird moment where, you know, these kind of really inflated media representations and everything's going on just connects with this moment of, you know, that's on a completely different level. And again, that's, I think, a lot of what I was trying to play with. And just again, here I sort of recite a bit the ways in which being of Serbo-Croatian, you know, Canadian descent and having to sort of face, I guess, the ways that even during the bombing, trying to talk to people about it and the responses I got and so on, and how, what a complicated time it was in a sense. And then another, I think, weird dimension, I think, which was new with 99 and probably that area, is that so much of the war, in a sense, I mean, experienced it through the media and television, but also through the internet, because my aunt, who was, like, in a basement, would, like, climb upstairs, you know, at certain times of the day, and if the power was working, send emails. So we were getting these email dispatches, and it was very surreal to be, you know, this very technology that comes out of this, you know, this, you know, industrial infrastructure that's driving the whole intervention, you know, is also a way to communicate with people. So I basically included some of her emails with her permission. And I also translated them to English. But again, like, you know, again, the two sort of images that were kind of colliding for me at that time, which is the way we were shown the war, and then sort of my memories and so on. And then also when I visited in 2001, I did sort of want to document some of the sites, you know, that were, and that still are sort of sitting in ruins in the area. And, you know, what were some of the impacts? And again, I think this is going to be a new project that I do, the impacts, you know, economically, environmentally, you know, I mean, it's very much debated, but I mean, the whole region is extremely polluted with depleted uranium, and the sort of health effects that's starting to have on people, you know, like other places I know. I mean, that's been very much the case in Iraq for a good 10 years. And just sort of all the fallout, again, that we don't hear from, because these things are covered for a flash and then people move on. And then also what's really happening now is that basically, you know, all these companies are moving in and buying out what's left of what was bombed out. So you have U.S. Steel bought up the steel manufacturing recently, and the workers were on strike, and I think they reached an agreement where they're paying them 15 cents a day. You know, so, and I mean, this is at a, you know, there was a country that had a very different economy at another time. So just sort of all the follow-up that, you know, happens after that we don't hear about, I think, for good reasons. You know, the electricity infrastructure as well was, you know, completely, I mean, they've been having to borrow all this money to try and pay it off, and the IMF has told them to hike the electricity prices, and already people, you know, I think electricity bills are something like 3 times a monthly salary, and, you know, they have to hike it again, and so all this kind of stuff politically that I think has been left out. I'll just close, I'll show you, you know, and then basically at the other part of the side I included this is just some of the feedback I've gotten. I haven't gotten a lot. I have to try and get the word out on the site a bit more, too, I think, and include my production credits and so on. And then finally, links to sort of, I think, websites and groups and so on that have a bit more of a complex view of what's going on. So I have, for example, an anti-militarist anarchist group in the region, Zenit Magazine's coverage, FAIR, groups from the region, some of the women's groups, queer groups, and so on, and alternative media. So I think I've covered pretty much everything there. I'm just trying to, I've sort of touched on, again, I think my next project, I also want to look at the follow-up and sort of what the impacts are of neoliberalism and what's going on economically in the region. I guess we can open up to questions, and I don't know if you have comparisons with how things are here or how it compares to, let's say, what's happened in Iraq, or if you have your own projects that you're interested or ideas or whatever. For this one, basically, I explained a little bit at the beginning. I got support through Jive and Studio XX, which are two women's media organizations in Montreal, for the training to do this. So basically, they provided a certain number of hours of training and guidance and so on. And I think, we got like a small honorarium to produce it and to do a project. And this is, again, if you can get access and, some basic training, because I tried to keep the site very low tech, and so it still took a certain amount of learning, but in a sense it allowed me to bring together all kinds of different things that, I hadn't, been able to, just the interplay of the links and the videos and the text and so on. I don't have tons of support. I'm a graduate student, and it was like really, and I think that's why it took me a long time to do it. I was squeezing it in on the side amongst my other research, and my research topic is in a completely different area, partly because I found it hard to work on these issues within the, with an academic setting. It was very hard at a certain point to work on this stuff. So it was also really a way to do stuff I couldn't do elsewhere, but it took a long time because of that. I think it took me a good year and a half, 2 years, Well, that's cool. So you do think text is net art, that's good. Mais c'est avec la technologie, aussi avec les images, parce que avec les médias et tout cela. Et c'est ça, je pense, que, comme je le dis, que c'est un des plus grands défis sur un certain niveau, parce que on est tellement bombardé tout le temps par ces images, et de prendre le temps pour vraiment voir comment ça fonctionne, puis de penser comment faire parler dans un autre sens. Mais c'est vrai que, comme je dis, avec chaque instance, que ce soit militaire ou des événements qui sont tellement amplifiés dans les médias, c'est vrai qu'on n'a pas vraiment le temps de vraiment réfléchir. Oui, c'est ça. Et c'est un peu comme ça que ça passe aussi, je pense. Oui, aussi, et comme ça fonctionne pour faire focuser sur une chose puis de passer très vite à une autre chose, c'est aussi un peu ça. Je pense que c'est vrai qu'il y a tout le travail à faire avec toutes les choses qui se passent, parce que déjà ça fait un an que j'ai fini ça, et je trouve que c'est déjà déplacé tellement et ailleurs. Et Yeah, it's how do you play that catch-up? Because it's true. I mean, I do think so much of left activism or, alternative, it so often happens in such a state of crisis all the time. You're constantly, and I think it has its own toll, on. And, I mean, it just strikes me also, you saying, how I mentioned it took me so long, but I also felt like this was the first time I could even start to voice where I was coming from. I felt at the time, I've never experienced that before, where I've intervened on many struggles and many other, situations in the world, but then when it came to, like, my own situation, I I just completely did not even know how to explain to people what was going on or anything, you know. And yeah, so I mean, I think it took me a long time before I could even begin to, you know, try and find a way to articulate that. So I think it was an interesting medium for that also, you know. Because even just, I mean, some of the, you know, the few emails I've gotten from people who've either been through similar things, you know, and it just reaches people in a different way, you know. So, I mean, although I'm working on a French translation right now, because I would like to also, you know, I mean, so much of the net is in English, you know, and it has its own, I think, biases built in that way. But nonetheless, you know, I've had some interesting feedback that way. Oh, mais c'est piraté, c'est piraté, je veux dire, nettement. Mais c'est un peu, c'est la question, parce que on est tous exposés tellement à ces images, et on doit tous les subir, et puis... Mais c'est vrai que même les extraits des actualités, tout cela, c'est piraté, c'est tout ce que j'ai fait sur mon OCR. Alors, éventuellement, il peut me poursuivre, c'est mieux, mais... J'ai pas trop à payer, en tout cas, j'ai pas beaucoup d'argent pour ça. Mais c'est ça un peu aussi, le détournement, hein. C'est vraiment de prendre ces images et... Oui, bien sûr, mais je pense que c'est dans le programme, mais je peux dire aussi, c'est... D'accord, c'est... Oui, c'est www, c'est Pomme-Grenade, c'est P-O-M. JRENADE.org. J. Oui, c'est un peu mon.
Qui est là d'ailleurs.
Oui, c'est ça, mais c'est parce que c'est le nom que j'ai utilisé pour le site. Voilà, Pomme Grenade. Je fais contre l'action.